Let's
Love
do
Talk
it.
Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Welcome, brothers and sisters. This is African American Empowerment 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you, Shemaine Man, Marvin Rome, and of course, coming to you live. We got sister Keisha in the house. Brother George, with the Willie Lynch, Kwanzaa, information, knowledge, and power. It's for you. Come on with me now. Brothers and sisters, sisters and brothers, there is no greater love. There is no better love than for self and kind. And welcome again to African American Empowerment Saturday. It is 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for the African American community. You're probably wondering to yourself, why is he doing that? Because our people need help. And as you look back over the annals of time and look back into our entry to this country, the access that we have, the position that we were placed in when we got here, and the condition that we currently hold, there is a lot to be desired. And so we want to help improve our people by improving their knowledge, improving their understanding, and improving their confidence in themselves. We have been raised in a condition of white supremacy. That's just the truth about it. How do we change our conditioning? How do we change the way that our people look at themselves? You know, at one time we were less than a human in somebody's eyes, but we're just as great as anybody else. And there's no competition there. We just know who we are now. And we're saying we're great people with great ancestry. And we're going to continue to work toward that. So here's the deal. There are five pillars to the concept that we're working to empower our people. It's the peace concept. What are you talking about, Marvin? Politics, economics, athletics, health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, culture, and education. Start with politics first. It's the P. I'm spelling peace. We need a political agenda. Think about it. It might just dawn on you that African Americans need a political agenda in this country, that we all work for the same cause, for our people, to help us raise ourselves back up, to raise our awareness, to eradicate our political conditions by getting resources that we need through the political system to help our people help themselves. What else do we need? We need an economic development, an economic form that looks at how we can understand capitalism and how to use those resources wisely to build institutions that define our own reality, as Brother Stan would say. And then we have to understand the importance of how to save, how to earn, and how to invest that capital so that we can continue to grow our communities. Or if we start feeding money back into our communities, things would change. I believe the jail's numbers would shrink when we educate our people on the systems. And if we can understand how to navigate those systems, we would avoid the traps every time. Next is the A. This is directly towards you. What is your A? The status of your A? Athletics, health, wellness, fitness, nutrition. What is the status of your mental health, your physical health, and your emotional health? Those are the things that you have to look at individually. Are you working out? Are you pushing away from the table? Are you leaving those processed, sugary, salty foods alone? Are we now lowering our numbers in diabetes and heart disease and hypertension? Those are the things that are necessary. We got to do the work, getting you an exercise routine and getting you a regimen that works for you, that will build healthy and strong bodies along with healthy and strong minds. Next is C, relevant cultural programs like this one, right, that really looks at how we can help ourselves, how we can get that confidence that we need, chin up, chest out, that we're proud of who we are and our children walk this earth in that manner. And lastly, it's the E, the education. It's a comprehensive education that really looks at how we're going to develop our people, how we're going to develop strategies that continue to explore how we can get better each day, every day, one day at a time. Those are the tenets and the pillars of the NAAEA peace concept. Join us at naaea.weebly.com. That's www.naaea.weebly.com. And now it's time for the Stan Macklin moment. Be right back.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Brothers and sisters, this is our tribute to Brother Stan, who did it for so long, for so well. He's gone in physical, but he just left you a message. Stop trying to get in to fit in. Understand what we're doing and get with it. We can get change in our communities. We can get change in our families. We're going to have to do the work ourselves. That's just how it is. And that work starts with you and me. Are you willing and ready to do the work? Are you willing to commit to doing the work of working on yourself to improve and better your community? That is the work that needs to be done. And we here at the NAAEA have assumed the role and the responsibility of ensuring that that work continues to move forward. And now, without further delay, it is my brother time. It is the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with my brother George. Bring it, brother. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I'm doing it. One more time. Come on, Brother George. How you doing, sir? I had to do the extended version so I can rock a little bit.
How are you?
I'm doing well today, brother. I'm on the road today, but, hey, you know how that life is. How you feeling? What's going on, brother?
I feel good, brother. And, you know, the world is turning, and, you know, I'm hoping that the condition of our people is getting better by the day.
We keep doing this work, and what you got for us today, it'll help a long, 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 long way to getting that thing started and continue to move forward. What you got for us today, brother?
All right, brother. Well, from the Nguza Saba, the seven principles of Kwanzaa, today's principle is Nia, which is purpose. To make as our collective vocation the building and developing of our community in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. That's a powerful statement. Nia. The symbol and its name have become well known through the movie called Sankofa and through numerous African American artistic and commercial uses of the word. Literally, it means it is never too late to go back and fetch what has been lost. It has been used to encourage African Americans to go back and reclaim our past, our heritage, and our ancient African wisdom. Through the knowledge of our past, we can gain a greater understanding of our purpose in the present and our destiny as individuals and as a people. Man, that's a powerful symbol. Today, I'm going to continue with the teachings of Pitahotep, the oldest book in the world, and this was redone by Dr. Asa Hilliard, and the brother has passed on to the ancestors, but during his time, he was a very powerful brother, and you should check out some of his DVDs on YouTube, because he was a very powerful speaking brother. And he she really admired the work of Ptahotep, and that's why he redid it. If you are a person who judges, listen carefully to speech of one who pleads. Do not stop the person from telling you everything that they have planned to tell you. A person in distress wants to pour out his or her heart, even more than they want their case to be won. If you are one who stops a person who is pleading, that person will say, "Why does he reject my plea?" Of course, not all that one pleads for can be granted, but a good hearing soothes the heart. The means for getting a true and clear explanation is to listen with kindness. I think that's a serious statement there, you know, because a lot of us sit down and we listen to, you know, friends who want to, you know, just have someone to soundboard with when they're having issues in life. And so I think that that's a lot of what that particular statement is talking about. And sometimes we'll stop a person in the middle of what they're saying and tell them, "No, don't worry about that. Don't get too caught up in it," or whatever. But that statement is actually saying that hear the person out completely. Just let them completely sound off and tell you whatever it is that they want for you to hear from them. And it doesn't matter to them how they'll be judged after that point. It's not necessarily in a court of law. So, Brother Marvin, that's my segment. If you don't have any other questions, then we can move forward. But I think the question of the day is coming. Go ahead.
You got that right. But first, that was some really great information. That's something to think about, right? Think about if our people begin to apply that basic principle to their lives. What a difference it would make. Thank you, Brother George. And now for the empowerment question of the week. It's really simple. What can we do, Brother George, to begin to reclaim our history, our heritage, our culture, and our legacy?
Well, you research is always good, and you don't have to research real deeply, but that's what I was saying about brothers like Asa Hilliard that lectured and educated our people, because he was an educator by trade. And he educated our people. And there are many more who educate our people and can teach you about the history and heritage of our people and the things that we have accomplished as a people. And, you know, it just takes a little research to go online and start listening to some of these brothers and, you know, that are our ancestors. And they have done great work, you know, to help our people out. And there are even brothers that are still around that have done things to help the progress of our people. And I know that sometimes things look bleak, but to know that there are those of us that are working just as hard on the other side to help our people to grow as there are those who would like to see our people destroy each other. You know, so that's, I mean, it's not completely soothing, but it's good to know that you still have brothers out here and sisters that are struggling hard to keep our people progressing in the right direction. So that's my answer, brother.
Brother George, Brother George, as eloquent as ever, you are exactly right. But here's the call, right? What's your purpose, right? The work is being done, but we need you. We need more and more of our people to stand in the gap, to step in and become committed to change, changing our ways and being less commercial, right? Less vocal and more active. Talk all day, but can we do the work? Can we get the work done? Can we manufacture? Can we create? Can we build and put our young people and our children and the next generation in position to be successful wherever we are in the world? That's a global charge. Can we, again, begin to do that work? Great work of working on ourselves. It's African American Empowerment Saturday. Of course, it's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. Tell somebody about the show. That's at least the littlest, smallest thing that you could do. We have to grow our listener base now, and it starts with you. 845-277-9250 is the call-in number. We got Sister Keisha coming up. We're going to kick it with her today, Brother George and I. Slido is in effect today. It's 257-369. Slido.com. Go ahead, slide on out there if you want to put your comment in that way. If you're listening, and I know you are. 845-277-9250. If you want the live call-in line that you can talk to myself, Brother George, and Sister Keisha about the topic of the day, we'll just be kicking it around. And also, again, slido.com, S-L-I-D-O, 257-3369. And now, for the person you all been waiting for, we got Sister Keisha coming to you live right now and in color. Let's bring it. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Sister Keisha, welcome.
Hello.
How are you?
Welcome.
Hello and
how are
welcome.
You
how are you?
I'm
doing
great.
Good.
Can you hear me?
Doing good. Yes, ma'am. Can hear you loud and clear.
New. Great. Brother?
Yeah, what's the good news, sister?
Nothing. Just been listening to you guys and waiting to get on here and share and answer any questions that you guys have for me to answer in terms of what you guys have been talking about.
All right. Well, we've been talking about a lot because there's a lot that, in my opinion, needs to happen in order for change to occur in the lives of our people, in the lives of our children, and the potential lives of the generations that are yet to come. But the work has to be done today. It has to be a plan formulated for it next week. There must be efforts put in place for us to think and plan and strategize in an effort to prepare our people to move forward. So before we get started, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, why you do it, and just, again, who you are. And welcome to the show, African American Empowerment Saturday.
Okay. My name is Keisha Cummings. I serve the marginalized communities in Richmond, primarily, but what I serve, period, is humanity. But again, the focus of mine is the marginalized communities in Richmond. And that is a target focus because what I have seen living in Richmond for the last 20 years is that quite often I don't see them in you guys spoke about resources as one of the goals, as being part of people considering them part of humanity. And so I, 5 years ago, started To Love, and you said something profound, which I was taking notes when you guys were talking, and what you said is that we have to be less commercial out here. And so after serving the community in various capacities in school systems, mental health systems, health and wellness systems, a lot of different systems that I was working in, I said, you know what, this is, as you would say, too commercial, right? And I knew that from what I had seen that the answers that I think and that what God showed me it wasn't commercial, and that it had to be out of the box, and it had to be static, and it had to not be part of the status quo. And I think that, you know, just us as a society right now, we have to we as a society, as humans, have to move from status quo, from what we've been trained
yes.
to think, what we have been trained to learn, how we have been trained to understand. And so I just think as us in general, just as people, we all have to move from being less commercial. So with that being said, I started To Love. As I said, working in the community and serving, I saw the groups that I particularly work with was the marginalized community. I saw the isms in which I worked in was not serving them. And I believe all humans should be served. And so I said, I'm going to start my own thing. I see that the curriculum is not serving them, so let me start my own curriculum. I see that the answers is not so much what we're taught to believe, so much as mental health or, let me see, it wasn't mental health, it was more that they had poverty. It wasn't about them. It wasn't about them needing saviors. It was about people needing empowerment. And so,
mm-hmm.
again, I started To Love 5 years ago, and it's kind of difficult. A lot of people always ask me what my mission is, but it's difficult for me to pinpoint something because it's ever evolving, because the world is ever
mm-hmm.
evolving, and so. We do a lot of different things, but it is all to bring us closer to humanity. And what I tell people is that black boys and black men are also human, right? And so, it's not that I'm doing something specifically for black boys and black men. I'm doing something for humanity. I just feel like a lot of times that where we are in this country, they for some reason have not been looked at in a humane way, and we know that from the beginning of the inception of this. Yes. And so To Love is not about talking. We are about executing, and
right.
we have done a lot. We have I bring resources to the community in so many different facets. Again, resources that any human should have that are kept away to me intentionally. And try to bring it to society, whether or not there's housing, whether or not there's food. We're talking about basic needs, food, shelter, clothing. And
mm-hmm.
so you can ask me questions, but we have done a lot. We have done a lot in terms of the role as Miss Keisha. And the role as Keisha Cummings, I try to work in terms of policy because I believe that poverty is
mm-hmm.
a policy choice. Hands down.
Mm-hmm.
It's too many resources
Come on now.
In the United States. It is too many resources in globally for anybody to be in poverty. And so I believe, again, that poverty is a policy choice. And so on the Keisha Cummings side of things, I try to work with different policymakers and decision makers to help them get some understanding that poverty is a policy choice and that they can contribute to eradicating poverty, in which we know poverty causes a lot of other things, causes a lot of symptoms, right? But the root is poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And so we try to tackle those symptoms to eradicate poverty. And I know that it can be done. And I just want to say the biggest thing in terms of To Love, I talk a lot, and I give a lot of solutions, but the one thing I want the audience to take away from, and anybody that's listening, is the way that I am able to give the solutions and or give suggestions is because I've already done it. So it's like, well, how do you know that this can be done? Oh, because we've already done it. How do you know that you can feed a project with no funding? Oh, because we did it already.
Come on.
You can't tell me that you can't tell me with entities that had millions of dollars that is people still hungry, because we fed a whole, actually the largest housing project on the East Coast from Baltimore to Atlanta during COVID with absolutely no funding, with just consistency, with just love, which is just people. And I want to say that that's the biggest resource out here. It's not money to me. It's love, right? That is the absolute biggest resource. It is to be present and in love. That is the absolute biggest resource. And so what I'm simply asking people to do in terms of to love is to just be present in love. And love encompasses a lot of stuff, right? But everybody deserves love. So that is what true love is. It is that to ensure that that's the vision, right? The vision is to ensure that everyone receives love no matter their race, their socioeconomic status, or their background. And so that is what true love does.
That's pretty good. I was over here in the amen corner saying, preach, sister, preach. I love it. I love it. Right? So let's go back to what you said about poverty being the root, right? And so I agree in terms of policy and practice and systems, right? And we have to realize that all of these things are systems. You mentioned that poverty is the root and dysfunction is the fruit that's produced by the seed of poverty. They just put it there, and then it starts to germinate itself. And so we have to be able to come up with strategies. Like you said, you're doing sweat equity. You're getting out there and creating ways and manifesting ways, because we are co-creators. So how do you do the policy work first, and then how do you compare or contrast that with poverty?
That's a good question. So the policy
did I go too
work,
deep?
No, absolutely not. Policy work, okay. So I wear so many different hats, and I had this conversation this morning when I was having coffee. To change, right? So you got Miss Keisha. You got Miss Keisha is the one that serves the community. Miss Keisha is love. Miss Keisha is the crybaby, right? Miss Keisha is the giver. And then you have Keisha Cummings that goes into these rooms with the people that are making the decisions, that oftentimes if they aren't directly making the policies, they are implementing the policies. And so what I saw in my role as a therapist in Richmond Public School System, and what I saw in my role as a teacher, and what I saw as my role in as a counselor is, and that was over a 13-year span. I need people to understand that, right? And I keep saying that because a lot of times, when it comes to what I do, people are like, you think you know everything. And I'm like, but not because I think, it's because I have served. So what I'm trying to give people the answer, I'm trying to stop you from not having to go through different things that I went through, or stuff that's not going to work nine times out of 10, because I tried it and it didn't work, right? And so getting back to your question, so you could be on the ground like I am, but at the end of the day, policies that are put in place really impact what is going on the ground, right?
True.
And so I work with people who may be at the General Assembly, or they may be lobbyists, or sometimes, you know, I go to Congress. I advocate on Capitol Hill. I advocate in the Virginia state capitol, depending on what the policy is that directly or indirectly impacts the communities that I serve. And so what I do with most of the people that are, like I said, maybe lobbyists or organizations that do that, right, for a living, that focus on policy, I try to be a conduit between the community I serve and them. Because what I've found with a lot of policymakers or people that are at the table is that they have no understanding, of the people that they are making policies for and or making decisions for on one side. And then on the other side, you have people that absolutely understand what they are doing with policies. And so it's tricky, right? Because, you know, sometimes people don't think that stuff is intentional. And what I've learned is that stuff is intentional, right? And when I try to break that down to people and give them solutions, that's hard for people to wrap their mind around. And and I understand that they don't have understanding. So I think that's what I try to do with, I don't want to name organizations on here that I work with, just because I haven't spoken to them about talking about our partnerships. I have a lot of different partnerships.
That's fair.
With policy and organizations.
That's fair.
And so, but I try to be that kind of understanding between those people that have what we call power and the people that they're making the policies for, if that makes sense.
Yes.
And in my work,
yes,
in which I do on the side of the policy, what I can say is that the communities that I serve, which are the most marginalized, are also, I think, to me, the most unheard. And I think the most voiceless, right? And so I try to ask God to use me as that voice. And so I take that very serious. I can give you an example. People know me as a school choice advocate, right? And that is a tricky subject in the state of Virginia. We are probably one of the worst states in the country in terms of school choice. And we have policies that come down that advocate for school choice, right? And so it's like, oh, Keisha Cummings is a school choice advocate. Get behind this policy. And so I'm going through the policy and I'm reading it. And I'm like, yeah, this is a great school choice policy, but this policy is not going to impact the marginalized community, so I can't get behind it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, yes, I see that school choice, but I need for it to be school choice for the babies in the communities I serve. Right? And so
Absolutely.
Someone may say, well, we can't make it, Keisha, just for marginalized communities. And I might say, well, I'm not asking you to make it for marginalized communities. You and I know how this policy thing goes. I want you to make your bill so that it has to include marginalized communities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? And so when it comes to policy and decision makers, I try to be that person that tries to ask God to, number one, make sure I'm doing his will, but be the voice for his kids too.
Yes. I like the way you put
those
God
that
in
are
there.
Marginalized communities, those that are not taught to come to the General Assembly, those who recognize that it doesn't matter if you are black or white, it doesn't matter if you are Democrat or Republican, what matters is that I am in poverty. Right? And again, I believe poverty is a policy choice. And so I know I am here for this is an African-American empowerment radio, and everybody knows that I love black people, love black men, love black women, but I'm advocating just for humanity because I was on a show not that long ago, and what I was telling them is that my best friend lives in the mountains, and when I talk to he's from the mountains, I apologize. When I talk to people that knew him, his family members and people in the community, they were white, rural people. And speaking with them, I'm like, Dad, y'all sound just like my babies in the hood. And that's when I had understanding that it necessarily wasn't a black or white thing, that it was a poverty thing. And it was about capitalism. And it was about capitalism over humanity. And I'm about humanity over capitalism. Although I am a capitalist. if that makes sense.
If you understand how to play the game, play it well. Play it well. I wanted to ask you a question. First of all, am I talking to Miss Keisha, or am I talking to Keisha Cummins? Ooh, which one is I'm going to direct this question to?
If you're talking about the babies, you're probably talking about you talking to Miss Keisha. It depends.
All right. Well, I'm going to talk to Keisha Cummins on this one, right? Because this is more along the line of, because, you know, in the introduction, we talked about the tenets of the NAAEA, and it's about politics, right, which policy and our social work falls under, policy falls under that. And so I wanted to talk to you about effective practice, right, for changing policy. What suggestions do you have for the people? And I would say you have to have your voice to be heard. If you don't, like what you talked about with voices, if people can't see you and if they can't hear you and you're not making noise, then they won't know you and they won't advocate for you. But the first thing we have to do is advocate for ourselves. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. And that is a great question. Number one, I mean, I can answer that question on many different levels. From elementary school, civics absolutely has to be brought back in our classroom. It is absolutely no reason why civics is not in the classroom. And so we talk about, again, stuff being intentional, right? And so when you are educating kids from the age of whenever they begin to be educated, they need to understand who makes the decisions, right? A lot of times on this call, you'll hear me talk about God. I am a very spiritual person, but we are in the world. And in a worldly sense, you have people that make decisions, and you have people that have been put in place. And civics needs to be taught from a young age so that people understand who makes decisions. They need to understand the school board. They need to understand city council. They need to understand the mayor. If you're on Henrico Board of Supervisors, they need to understand delegates. They need to understand senators. They need to understand the House of Representatives. They need to understand that it is a difference between your state senator, right, and your congressional leader, right? That is state, federal, and local. They need civics has to be brought back into the school system, to me. And the biggest thing that you said, I mean, the other answer to my question is empowerment. That will be a reoccurring answer when you ask me something is the word empowerment. That is actually the number one on with to love. That is the number one core value is empowerment, right? To empower the people that they do have a choice, because again, what people do understand is that no matter what side of the aisle you're on or no matter what color, that you do have power, right? So a lot of people say,
yes,
you need to run for office. And I'm like, but the power is in the people. So if we understand that as a people, then we will vote more. Then we will get more involved in the decisions that are made for us. Now, can we negate that there are policies, again, put in place that don't allow us to vote, right? That don't allow us to say that, hey, we are human, right? Not that I'm a felon. Wait a minute, I'm sorry, because I hate when people label people as felons. Not that I am a human that committed a felony, right? Someone has the right to protect myself no matter what. It is, I am a human, right? And I should be able to speak up for what I think is best for me, for what's best for my neighbor, what's best for my family, what's best for my son, my daughter, my mother, not because of anything else, but the fact that I'm a human, right? And I just think that our system has moved us away from humanity. And so what I believe in true love is that we have to create a new system. And what is that system? It's a system of love. Right? And what is love? God is love. So some people that don't believe, you know, like the brothers on here might not believe in Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior. right? And that's okay if other people don't, because you might believe in Allah, right? Or you might have got to say Jah, like my son said. I was on the show. He said, "Ma, why you ain't say Jah? Why would you say Buddha and not say Jah?" I said, "Okay, I'm going to say Jah next time, son." So it doesn't matter, but you have to create, because no matter what God you serve, the common language is love, right? And so
that's right.
From that age of elementary school, we are literally trained to move away from God. Automatically, as soon as you enter, we are automatically trained to move away from God. Well, how so? Well, let's take everybody and put them in the classroom at the age of 4 or 5, and let's train them all to answer stuff a certain way, to be in formation, and that's not of God, because he made us all authentic. He made us all different.
Yes.
And so immediately we are trained to untap into our God self. And so, again, my answer is to create a new system of humanity, and that is to love people, no matter what, right? Mm, and like I said, love encompasses so much. It encompasses understanding. Like people, I was on a show the other day and an interview, and she said, "Keisha, if you had one word or a sentence to describe humanity, what would it be?" No, she said to describe. No, she said, "What's your definition of humanity?" And I told her, forgiveness and understanding. Mm. Because as a society, we try to be the right person as opposed to focus on understanding why that person is that way, why that person answered that way, why that person reacted that way, why that person cried that way, why that person prayed that way. No. My way is not the right way, but let me understand why you do it that way. And then we also got to forgive. The biggest thing that we got to forgive is, as society and as people, what I learned in my journey, the first step to forgiveness is forgiving yourself. That's the biggest thing, forgive yourself. Because what happens is we can't face or acknowledge what we have done as society and as people, because that makes us have to look at ourselves.
Yes.
And it's hard to look at yourself. It's hard to look at yourself and say, "Oh my gosh, I'm walking around in all my privilege." You know why? Because you don't mean to cause harm against anyone. So you don't want to acknowledge your privilege. Or you don't want to acknowledge your hate. Because somebody has did this, or this is how them people act. So, no, this is how I carry it. No, you don't want to acknowledge your hate in yourself. It's hard to acknowledge. So you got to work on forgiveness, forgiving yourself first, and then understanding. And so I hope – I'm sorry if I went off, but that is –
No, you good. You good.
My answer in terms of policies is that we have to bring back civics to school. We have to bring back empowerment to people. And again, I have friends, right, that live off of Race Street, Grove, Hanover, Monument Avenue. They're probably listening because I sent it to them. And they call me with so many different challenges. And I'm like, I wish that they could understand, and the other people that I serve, that they so much alike. It's just that your challenges are different, but you still have a challenge with what's going on right now in the world, right? Let me give you an example. I had a friend, and the school that her son was attending was not working for her. And I said, "Put him in private school. You can afford it." She said, "No, Keisha, because there's so many people like the kids you work with that can't do it. And that's not right that I have the ability to be able to do it." I said, "Shit, why not? What are you talking about? That's your child," right? So I thought to come to this meeting about school choice. That's a whole other thing I could talk about, school choice. And it's like, no, because they're trained again to think like, "Oh, well, you know, public school is this, public school is that." No, public schooling is not working. You just talked about how your son is not thriving. Pull him out. It's okay. And if we're not going to pull them out, then we have to reimagine public schools. We have to cut it out because we know it's not working. the traditional school system. And so we can't move forward because when I talk to people, like, right, it's, they defend, they don't even understand that I'm not even talking about them personally. I'm talking about a system in which they were trained to think that works, knowing that it doesn't. Right? So I might say, well, look at the test scores, and teachers are like, boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, sis, I'm not talking about you, though. And you can't listen, you can't hear what I'm saying because you're taking it personal, not understanding that I'm talking about a system that really is ungodly, right? And and because I was that teacher. I was a teacher, sis. And I love my babies. And I love my kids. And I would do anything for the kids, our kids. But then I had to look at it as a teacher, and I'm looking like, wait a minute, why are my babies still living in poverty? Why are the babies not going to college? I'm confused, right? And so that doesn't mean I was a bad person. That doesn't mean I didn't give it my all. What it meant was that it's something flawed. But until we acknowledge it, get ourselves out of the way and acknowledge it, we can't change it, right? We got to stop like, I never done anything with the intent to hurt my students. But at the end of the day, they went through school and they're still in poverty. So how does that work? How does that work? Because I know that the money that the traditional system got for them, if I gave them that out of my pocket, that their life would have changed. And even if I didn't give it to them out of my pocket, if I spent just a fraction of what the traditional system gave them and got them a CDL, that they wouldn't be in poverty. So please get yourself out of the way and acknowledge that something is not working. That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
I'm not saying anything about you, sis. I'm not saying anything about you that has a counseling organization. I was a therapist forever. I wrote IEPs. I wrote ISPs. I wrote 504s. I did all of that. Right? So I never wrote notes with the intentions of hurting my students. But what I realized is that, but did I do anything to help? And I'm not saying something about you. I'm not saying something about your business. I'm saying something about a flawed system that has to be recreated for the sake of humanity, no matter what background you come from. And when I say background, I'm talking about black or white. I'm talking about Democrat or Republican. I'm talking about rich or poor. I'm talking about straight or gay. I'm talking about any kind of background. I'm just talking about we had to reimagine what is going on in the United States, what is going on globally, and recognize that we as a people all over this world have to recreate the system that is broken.
True.
Because what's going on right now in a foreign land is the same exact thing as here. So I see people on the internet and they're talking about what's going on over there, and I'm like, but it's the same thing. How so, Keisha? It's apartheid right here in Richmond. Literally.
Wow.
I can take you around Richmond and the stuff is separated. One neighborhood is separated, black or white. Literally. By a broken bridge.
Mm.
Going through Jackson Ward. Where the construction was started a year ago, and you never see anybody work. So you just have a bridge, and it separates one part of Jackson Ward from the other. Actually, it isolates Gilpin Court. And it's crazy because I just saw it. Yeah, absolutely. Right now, we can go. And I'm saying that because I just saw a video 2 days ago where the same thing was going on in Israel or Palestine, whichever you choose to call it, where the brothers over there couldn't go out their front door. Because it was a particular, I guess, side of a town where Muslims aren't allowed to go or Palestinians aren't allowed to go. And I'm like, wow, that's going on in Jackson Ward. They're allowed to go, but same thing. We're talking about a people who clearly is considered inhumane. We're talking about where somebody's life is considered more valuable than the other. And to me, it's, you know, because I had people that are like, well, Keisha, I'm not a Bible scholar. right? I don't know scripture like how a pastor might know scripture. And I don't know all of these backgrounds, like how people might know like the history of this. I don't. So when people are talking to me and I'm talking to my Jewish friends and I'm talking to my Muslim friends, I'm like, well, the common denomination is humanity. I don't get it. I'm trying
That's
to
it.
Understand your thought process. And while I understand, the only thing I can gauge off of is God. That's the only thing I can gauge off. When I'm confused, what would God do? In my case, what would Jesus do? And it's walk in love. And it's not just walk in love
That's right.
with some people on one side of the bridge versus some people on the other side of the bridge. It's not walk in love with some people on one part of a country versus the other part of a country. It's God loves everybody.
Okay, Sister Keisha, Brother George wants to get in with a question.
I apologize.
That's all right. Go ahead.
You've been, man, you're on fire, and I'm loving it. What do you see as the solution? How, if you were to explain the vision that you have of a more perfect public school system, what would that look like to you?
Choice.
Okay, you got to unpack
choice.
That for me.
Okay. So, you talking about schools, man? Woo. Choice. It goes back to what I was saying in terms of from a child, we are tuned to tap. We are trained to tap out of who God made us to be, right? And
right.
I gave an example. And like, again, it doesn't matter where you're from. From the time you go into a school system, your individuality is taking away. Right,
okay.
Because you literally get into formation. No matter what school system you're in, right, you get into formation, and God created all of us different, right? And so, when I'm looking at different schools, right, I'm from Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, and I want to make this clear for people who are against school choice. I'm from Philadelphia. I come from a family of educators. My mother graduated magna cum laude from Howard University in English.
HU?
Yes. My aunt graduated from Duquesne in Pittsburgh. Right? My stepfather worked at Alani High School forever. My grandfather worked in recreation centers in all over Philadelphia and taught so many people that came under him that you guys know, like Wilt Chamberlain, like John Chaney. These are people that came under my grandfather, right? And so I come from a family of people. I have a school named after my uncle, and I want to say it's in Jersey City or Palmyra. I come from a family of educators. I come from a family of servers. And when my mother was alive, she used to have an issue with the fact that I was a school choice advocate because all she could see was, Keisha, I can't believe you like charter schools. And I would tell her, but Mom, is not so much about charter schools, it's about school choice. And I'm saying this, I just want to tell this part of the story so that people could have understanding that I have understanding, right? And so she would, in Philadelphia, basically all of the schools that were there when I was growing up are no longer there because of charter schools, right? So what do you mean, Keisha? When you have schools have to be funded, and they have to be funded based off of enrollment, right? That's coming up. I believe it's November 11th in Virginia. So when you have education, the state and the federal government pays you based off of the kids that go to your school. And when the kids no longer go to your school, the school can't run itself. It needs funding. And so when you take those kids from a traditional public school, you may put them in a charter school or independent school, those schools lose money, and yes, they do close down. Right? So I want people to understand that I have an understanding of that. And so like I said, growing up, primarily all the schools when I was growing up in Philly are no longer open, George. You know, Germantown, where my mom went to high school, is no longer a school. You know what I mean? Mm. West Philly is a charter school now. There's so many schools that have turned into charter schools, so I get that challenge that people have. But I also understand that parents and community members and parents had a choice, and they chose to go to a school that may have catered to the needs of that child. Let me give you an example. All over the country, you have various schools. You might have a school in which it could be a STEM school, science, technology, engineering, and math. In Chicago, they have a school that is an athletic school, right? Then you have dance schools. Like growing up in Philly, George, we had creative and performing arts. That's what it was called. I don't know what they still have there right now. Then you have schools that are catered to, you have schools that may be catered to horror culture. That's another thing that we need to bring back into the school system with our people, teaching them how to grow their own food.
Right.
But they have schools like that. And so what that allows you to do is be an individual, right, as opposed to going to a traditional school and you say, well, oh, everybody got to learn. No, because this person might be a musical genius. This person is a scientist. This person has a gift with animals. This person has a gift with language. My niece graduated from a charter school in Philadelphia, in which she graduated and she learned Spanish and Arabic. It was called the Global Charter School or something like that, right? And they talk about different languages and different cultures. I would have loved that growing up because I love people. So I love studying culture. That's why when I went to University of Connecticut, my major initially was anthropology. I'm like, oh, my God, they got a major where you can study people. I love people. Right? Mm-hmm. I want to learn about people. So when you take choice away, you take individuality away. So it's not that I'm against public schools or I want public schools to close down. I am for people having choice. And in this great state, specifically in Richmond, always choice, but only for those that have money.
Mm.
So you might have a Montessori school. You might have a Montessori-style education, which I love a Montessori-style education. Let's talk about that. You don't have to spend, again, 45 minutes on science, 45 minutes on math, 45 minutes on social studies, right up in that little regimen, that formation. No, you might like drumming a little bit. So you can stay here for 4 hours as long as you get the rest of that done. I love the Montessori style of education. You got Mannequin Sabbath. You know, you have that other school, I forgot what it's called, like a wizardry school or whatever. You have the high-class schools in which my friends went to from Windsor Farms, the St. Christopher's and the St. Catherine's, where they're not being trained. They are being educated to be CEOs, right? Those kind of schools in which your brain is allowed to critically think, where your brain is allowed to be a CEO, where your brain is allowed to be an entrepreneur, where you're taught to be a boss. Not in the traditional public schools where you're just taught to stay in formation and be a worker your whole life. And so when you begin to give kids choice, then they begin to succeed. And when you take choice away, in here, disproportionately, black kids don't have choice.
Right.
Okay, so let me just give you a question that somebody will say. They will say, well, Keisha, we have a lottery system. That's cute. But we know that unless you have transportation to get to and from, if I live in Mosby Court and I get accepted to Fisher, how the hell I'm going to go from Mosby to Fisher?
Right. Come on.
By Stony Point Mall.
Come on, sister.
So, yeah, you check a box and you say you have a lottery system. So you make stuff accessible, but it's inaccessible. So we just to have these uncomfortable conversations, right? I'm about having uncomfortable conversations. That's what Kicking It with Ms. Keisha is about, the podcast that I've been working on. It's having uncomfortable conversations, not because I'm trying to attack you, because we have to have uncomfortable conversations so that us together, we can come together.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people all the time, I feel like Richmond, people talk about California and L.A. And New York City and all of these Chicago. You know, I do a lot of stuff with gun violence. So people, we using this model. I'm like, what? See, I don't think like that. We got a model right here that they can use. I told the health department that. I told my friends they have a grant from the attorney general. I told the mayor's office that. We all want to do something from another city. Why don't we create our own thing here? And they imitate us. But to answer your question, Brother George, it's choice.
Right.
I can use my son as an example. He's very, in a school way, he might be hyperactive. And I had to tell a teacher or two, when they told me that Jeremiah was hyperactive, yes, ma'am, okay, he's a phenom. But see, we're not trained to do that. We trained to say, oh, Jeremiah, sit down, da-da-da-da, all that other stuff. No, my son's a phenom. So while he gets a half an hour of recess, he really should get two. Because he was dunking since he was two. Real talk. You feel me? So I'm not that one to say, okay, well, we have to, what happens with the school is say, well, train our kids to say, oh, well, you're bad, or we got to shift into the structure. And that structure that we shift into removes us from the God in us. So I'm going to keep the God in my son as long as I can, because we're in the world. So, so you see what I'm saying? And so choice allows that. We got to get back to homeschooling. We got to get back to really uncomfortable conversations. Like, this is an African-American empowerment thing, right? I mean, I don't mean thing, radio show. It is
My son
was injured, right? This is an uncomfortable conversation I want to have with people. My son was injured at a football game. We could have a whole dialogue about that, about entertainment from slavery time to this time, but that's a whole nother subject. But he was injured in a football game. And his doctor, we were talking, and she was asking me what I did. And she was telling me that her relative studies education in black boys for a living. And I was like, well, great. Could you throw me some data? Because a lot of times we're trained, again, to only go off of data. That's a whole nother social cognizance, again, part of society, and certain groups remaining supreme based off of how we are structured to believe everything based off of data. But here's the data. What she said that her relative had taught her was that if a black boy does not have a black male teacher by the fourth grade, he is 80% more likely to end up incarcerated. Let me say that again. Or maybe the data was 80% of the people that she studied didn't have a black male teacher, right? And so someone may say, oh, Keisha, you got a problem with white people. No, I don't. These are just the facts. Black boys should be educated and see black real male role models in them. And so that goes back to the policy discussion. There are policies in place that don't allow black males to teach. Where we could put policies in place in which black men can teach. But we are the only people that are like, you know, it's not a racial thing. It just is a human thing, right? And so we have to have these uncomfortable conversations, and I think that us as America, we're so scared to have uncomfortable conversations that stuff is just buck wild. It's like, oh, you're offending somebody. I'm not offending anyone by telling the truth. That's not being offensive. right? I'm not offending someone, or I don't mean to be offensive when I have something about how I think my child should be raised, or an opinion on how I think people should be raised, right? But we have to have those uncomfortable conversations, and we have to believe that we are empowered. And another biggest thing about empowerment is unification. It is not going to just work with black people working together. It is not just going to work with white people. We have to be unified as a people. That's another tool of the system is division. Oh, they have to divide, because if we unify, then stuff will change. But we have to divide by label. Other than that, our system won't work. So we are intentionally divided by race. We are intentionally divided by party. We are intentionally divided by religion. We are intentionally divided by the labels that we wear. Any kind of label shows some type of division. And when we understand that the one label that doesn't change is love, then we'll come together as a people and create a new system. It's quiet, y'all. Y'all make sure I, am I talking, like, what? Did y'all hang up? Hello? Hello?
Sister Keisha?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you. Go right ahead,
oh,
right?
Okay.
You're doing the right thing, right? It's education. Right? It's being able to give our people something to think about, right? Some resource to be able to stimulate action, right? To be able to help the mindset in it, to establish new protocols for how we're going to operate going forward. I like your principle of humanity, right? That's one of my things as well. I think we have a human condition, right? And into mankind in some regard is out of order, and a portion of the population seems to be well out of order than others, which creates situations for the rest of the group. But to go back to what you talked about with choice, right? We can now choose, right, political action. We can now choose economic action, or like with the what we did in the 60s, right? And I'm not saying do this, but like sit-ins and stop purchasing things. We can do those things, right? But I think, again, when it goes back to capitalism, our people are so spoiled now that some of them don't want to give up their comforts to help somebody else, right? And I think we have to be able to invest in our communities, not just because we have resources, but we have to give it to those who are in need the most. But many of us would say, well, if I got it, they should be able to get it too. But that's not a fair statement, right? Because there are systems in place, right, that we must learn to navigate around. And some of our people find benefit in doing that. Let me just say this. You're listening live to Miss Keisha or Keisha Cummins, whoever one she flew in with right now. She's on Keisha Cummins giving us the rundown on politics and economics, all empowerment concepts. So culture, education, choice, all of those things are important. 845-277-9250. Slido.com today is 2573-369. You want to join in the conversation, and she flows. I like how you roll there, Sister Keisha. I really do, because you are thought provoking. If we can get our people to think, then we can get them to act, and that's what we need the most, right? It's for action to get down inside of the communities and in the streets, and then we can get change. You're exactly right. Let's move over to Slido for just a minute. Slido.com. You got a couple of questions here. Here's the first question for you, Miss Keisha. Strong advocacy is needed amongst our people. Teach to reach. Knowledge is power. Churches, families, neighbors need to stand together in order to make a change. What are your thoughts on that, sister?
Oh, I'm so glad they brought that up. So glad. I just want to touch back on something powerful that you said. I tell people, I'm on the ground, boots on the ground, so people don't believe that I'm a capitalist. I'm absolutely a capitalist, because I do understand that we need resources. And what I do understand is that we have a plethora, an abundance, an overflow of resources. But the problem is exactly what you said. Nobody reaches back and gives, right? Nobody reaches back and gives. So it's like, well, Keisha, you're not a capitalist. I'm like, I absolutely am. And my friend said, well, what would you do with all the money, right? Because he has an issue with people that have money. And I said, I would do what I already do. Just all money does is enhance who you are. So if I'm a giver with a lack of money, what do you think would happen if I had money? So we've been in a project for the last 2 years doing yoga and meditation and working out with absolutely no funding. So imagine if I had funding. Everybody would have yoga mats. Everybody would have bowls. And I'm talking about this is nothing, not even $1,000. I sent the whole project away for $1,100. So imagine if I had $11 million. Mm. You feel me? Mm. So I am a capitalist. I do believe in money. And I'm glad that you said that. And we could have another show on people saying that people choose to be in poverty. But whoever that person was that just asked the question, that it goes back to the same thing, and I just had that conversation, the church. We must unify, right? And so I have a little cousin that works at for a large network. And she said, Keisha, when we do the award shows, nobody wants to work the gospel shows. I said, really? She said, no, because everybody is God. She said, nobody in production wants to work the award shows because everybody is the anointed one. Everybody is like God. And everybody just, she said, is the worst. We hate working gospel shows, right? And that goes back to me in terms of, again, division. Right? The key is us unifying as a people, as humans. Because I was on the phone, I have a pastor that's a friend of mine, and he serves, and he calls me, and I love when he calls me to serve because I love serving. And he showed me a quote that he said, and I loved it, and he said, we have to stop worrying about the church and focus on the kingdom. Right? And I was just listening to my bishop. Shout out to my spiritual father, Bishop Daniel Robinson, and he was talking about how it's going to be, how it's going to be so many tribes. It's going to be multiple tribes. It's going to be so many people in order for this to work. Because again, it's not a black God. It's not a white God. It's not a Chinese God. It's a God, right? But yeah, we have to unify, and I think that the church, I think the church has become systematized. To be honest. I don't want to offend anybody, but I think
Let's unpack that, Keisha.
Okay. You see people that go to church every Sunday, but where are you at? Where are you at in the community? Right. It's funny. I was driving in Jackson Ward, in the Carver neighborhood yesterday, and I saw the elders. And do you know who I'm talking about when I refer to as the elders?
Are you talking about the seniors?
Elders? No, I'm talking about in the Mormon church, those white guys that y'all see all over Richmond, and they wear the suit, the tie. I mean, they wear the white shirt, the tie, and they be on bikes, and you always see them.
Yep,
and you always see them no matter what. And it's funny because I jumped on, I was taking pictures with them, and I was like, you know what? No matter what hood I'm in, I always see the elders. I'm talking about they on Red Street in Mosby Court. They on St. Paul Street in Gilpin Court. They in Wickham Street, like the elders is always walking around. And so to me with the church, it's like, yeah, it's Sunday and it's Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday, whenever your Bible study is, but church is not in the building.
That's right.
That is religion. Church is in the streets. Church is in the world. Church is ministering to people, not just those couple of days. You got to get out the building, and that's where church is at. And we have to unify. And when I say have even systematized stuff, it is that stuff has to be so structured that nothing gets done. Everything has to be meetings and checks and balances, and it's kind of like I was telling like somebody the other day, please stop calling me. When you're ready to execute, let me know. But I'm not going to continue to be on a meeting with you after meeting, after meeting, after meeting, after meeting. I get it. But when are we going to execute? So even
like
to me,
that.
The church has become systematized because there's just it's too much system being in place. It's not enough God flowing. Too much man flowing. You know what I'm saying? In the church, like we
mm-hmm.
need God flowing. Is that even that has become regimented? Kind of like when the babies go to school. It's kind of like, oh, okay, let me go to church. But church is outside. Church is in the wild. You know, that's where I know. I don't know Jesus
mm-hmm.
to just be chilling all the time in the building. He was outside getting it popping. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the church has become systematized, and I think that the church is so powerful, but again, is not acting in the power that it can because the churches aren't unified. When stuff happens, I'm like, the church holds so much power. Why is it not being utilized? So let's get back to the church and policies. You have one man and one woman. They may have 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 or 5,000. I was, when I first came here in 2010, I believe, it was when I started working on school choice in Virginia. And I'm going to kind of bring this full circle. It was a guy who is Jewish, and he was a political figure, and he still is, and I won't mention his name because I didn't get permission to. And I was talking to black pastors because I was being mentored at that time by Dr. Ben Chavis. And I don't know if you know who Dr. Ben Chavis is.
Okay, yeah,
But he's behind the Million Man March. Okay, yeah. And so he said to me, Keisha. Yep, at that time, because we were working on a school choice effort in Virginia to bring school choice here. And I said to him, Dr. Chavis, I don't understand why we're talking to church leaders as opposed to political leaders. And he said to me, Keisha, the church has always been the pillar of change in the black community. And he said, there's no other place where you have that one person, man or woman, having that much power with all of those people. And he referenced Brother Malcolm, and he referenced Brother Martin Luther King. I said, oh, you're right. And he said, because they have that power, they have the influence over the political leader. And so for me, I'm like, whoo. And so I look at Richmond, and I'm like, imagine if 10 black mega churches got together. And said, listen, this is a policy that disproportionately affects black people. We're going to need you to do something about this. I think a lot of stuff would change. So I pray about that. I pray about the unification of the churches. I pray about the unification of the kingdom. I pray about, you know, humanity, because all that is humanity. And so when I say it has become systematized, it has become systematized. It moved away from, because again, it's just God. God is it's humanity. I mean, it moved away from that. It's like, who got the most likes? Who got the most, like, nah, that don't work. It's who got the most soul saved? Who got the most, when I see you, I know it's the God, because I might not, you feel me? Like, a lot of times religion will stop people from having a relationship with God, if that makes sense.
True, yeah. I believe
because
that.
You real holy.
I agree.
You real holy, and you don't cuss, and you don't drink, and you don't smoke, and you don't have sex. But you're super mean to me, secretary at my school. You mean, you know.
Come on.
And you mean, brother, you look down on me. So we got to get out the religious part and get back into the spiritual part. Just tune in into ourselves. And I'm sorry if that answer was long, but whoever said
agreed.
That, I appreciate
agreed.
That question.
Agreed. Let's go back to Slido. 845-277 if you want to get in. 877-9250 or slido.com. And the number is 257-3369, slido.com. Here's Slido again. Where do we start? With the practice of choice to manifest change. Miss Keisha, where do we start with the practice of choice, utilizing choice to manifest change? What you got?
Are they talking about school choice or are they talking about personal choice?
Well, I'm I think it's based on what you said about choice, so it must be school choice.
Okay. It goes down to the policies. When it comes to the school choice, it goes down to the policies. When it comes down to those answers come full circle, empowering our people to understand. A lot of times in Richmond, black people are taught to be Democrats, and I want to make it very clear, I am not a Democrat, nor am I a Republican. I am absolutely an issuecrat. So depending on what the issue is, that's how I'm going to vote. Right? Like I said,
I like that.
It was a policy. It was a school choice policy. I went to the General Assembly. I did not see that it affected marginalized communities in a way that I thought would be impactful. I did not support it. So it depends on that policy and that particular issue. But just choice, period, personal choice. Every day we have an opportunity to choose to walk in love or not. So, again, I don't know if that's a school choice question, because it could be very detailed in terms of school choice question. But it could just be a personal question, just choice. We have choices. My company is to love, but my slogan for my company is to live out love. Like, I don't like talking. I like execution. So it is not about talking about it. I like to live it, and that is what it is, like to live out love. So we have a choice to live out love, and I try to live out love in those different ways, right, by fighting for humanity and the things that you heard me about. But if that person is talking about school choice, it is to get educated and to make sure that the policies impact whatever you may want to impact. You know, like I said, it's so many different things in terms of school choice. Someone may want a school just for their demographics or the way that their children are structured. And so policies have to be created. but, yeah, to
True.
Be educated, to be empowered, and walk in your choice, and walk in your authority. As a society, we are scared to walk in our authority. And I'm not talking about our authority as man. I'm talking about authority as God. A lot of times people can't move forward because they're looking at it as a personal attack against a system. And I'm like, that's not a personal attack against a system. What I'm talking about is simple humanity. I don't have a problem with that person, and that's how I move forward. Because you think, because I've said something that goes against what you believe, that I have a problem with you. I don't have a problem with you, sis. I don't have a problem with you, sir. I have a problem with that particular issue going against humanity. So I'm not speaking out against, for instance, somebody called me from Gilpin Court and said, Keisha, they got the babies all in cuffs. I said, well, go over there. She said, well, what should I do? I said, see, you're speaking from a place of where you're taught to think. You're speaking from a place that you can't say to the officer. I'm not telling you to go over there with little booty playing saying, fuck the police. I'm not going over there. I'm not telling you to go over there and going off. What I'm telling you to do is go over there and just make sure that young men that you're telling me are in cuffs are being treated as a human. And so when you understand that you are a human and that you're not less than and that God made us all equal, then what you're asking for is simple. But see, you haven't even grasped that. That's why it's difficult for you to understand what I'm asking you to do. But when we all understand that we walk into humanity, we're asking for just simple human stuff.
True. Well, Keisha, we're getting close to time, so I want to see if I can squeeze in maybe one or two more questions before we do the closing comments. This next question is, what areas of civics would you suggest we focus on first?
Oh, definitely on the local level. I mean, those are the ones that impact you. Those are the ones that impact you the most. School board, city council, mayoral. Like right now, it's supposed to be a referendum coming up with the mayor. I don't even know if people know about that. Were we supposed to be possibly voting for a mayor at large? That is going to be so huge in a negative or positive way, depending on how you look at it. But you have to know what's going on locally in your community. But all of them are important, but the local one is so much more important. You have such high turnouts for presidential elections, but such low turnouts for the ones that directly impact you. And those ones that directly impact you, Well, eventually, you know, they coincide obviously with stuff that goes on a federal level and a state level, but the local elections are the most important. During school, my son had an absence because he did not go to school because he went to the General Assembly. Yeah, he's missing school, man. Why? He's going to the General Assembly. He needs to understand where laws and policies are that impact him, and he's going to the General Assembly this January. And again, we're talking about selective choice, because when I went there, I saw kids. They have kids that they bring to the General Assembly, but guess what? They talk a certain way, and they go to certain schools, and I was sitting here looking like, why is every single student in Richmond Public Schools not here? Why would they be there? Why would they learn stuff that can change them and impact them and where the impact is of everyday things that go on in their world? Again, intentionality. But I'm trying to hurry up and answer so we can go through the questions.
Sister Keisha, this has been a great, we're right at time now, a great, great, great show. I love your dialogue. I love your approach, right, particularly when we're talking about the human element. And I just want to get some final comments and how also our listeners can reach you as well.
Sure. Oh, the final comments is I hope that God used me to be able to, I want to just give number one, all thanks and glory to my Savior, Jesus Christ. But I just hope that God used me to touch somebody, to allow someone to think, and that people will walk away walking in love. You can reach me via phone or email. My email address is ms.keisha.toolove@gmail.com. You can reach me on my phone number, 267-777-9725. You can text. I will check those. That is the intern service that I have. And you can support the vision if you would like. My Cash App is To Love Everyone. That's the number two, To Love Everyone. My Instagram is disabled right now. I needed to fast and hear from God, and there was a lot going on. But my Instagram should be up in the next couple of days. It is _liveoutlove. You can follow me on Instagram. That is the work that I'm doing in the communities Monday through Friday. We are in the communities giving them yoga, giving them meditation, providing food, providing any kind of resources that they may need. And I just want to say one thing about To Love. The biggest difference that separates To Love from other organizations is that we go into the community. We're like a DSS on wheels, going into the community, trying not to be a savior, but being empowering people. So once again, you can support me at my Cash App is toloveeveryone.com, the number two, love, and the word everyone, not .com. And I just encourage people to live out love with everybody. Just wake up one day and every day and say, you know what, I'm going to make that choice to live out love.
All right. That's it for today. Thank you, Sister Keisha. Thank you, Miss Keisha. And thank you, Keisha Cummins, for coming on and sharing your vision, your power, and your To Love project. May God continue to bless it, continue to get that support, continue to walk this way. Continue to do what you got to do each day and every day, one day at a time, to empower yourself and your community, because it starts and ends and begins and comes back around to you again. Until next week, brothers and sisters, stay strong, stay up, and whatever you do, stay committed to yourself and your people. Peace and blessings. Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Oh, yeah. Have a great day.